So this morning we're going to read in Daniel chapter 11, if you can turn your Bibles to find Daniel chapter 11. We're going to continue our reading from last week, looking at parts of a vision that Daniel had starting in chapter 10. So we're going to read two more sections of that vision this morning. So we're starting in chapter 11, verse 28, and we'll just read up to verse 35 there. So 11, verse 28. The king of the north will return to his own country with great wealth, but his heart will be set against the holy covenant. He will take action against it and then return to his own country. At the appointed time, he will invade the south again, but this time the outcome will be different from what it was before. Ships of the western coastlands will oppose him, and he will lose heart. Then he will turn back and vent his fury against the holy covenant. He will return and show favor to those who forsake the holy covenant. His armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. Then they will set up the abomination that causes desolation. With flattery, he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant, but the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. When they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the wise will stumble so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time. Now we'll just skip over to the start of chapter 12, and we'll be reading the whole chapter there. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as had not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, roll up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river and one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" The man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand toward heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying, "It will be for a time, times and half a time. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed." I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, "My Lord, what will the outcome of all this be?" He replied, "Go your way, Daniel, because the words are rolled up and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of the days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance.
Hey, are you somebody that loves history? Is that something you enjoy or perhaps enjoyed studying when you were at school? You know, this week I got to take a quick straw poll of a few of the lads who were there on Yak Camp about whether or not they enjoyed studying history. And I got to be honest, there wasn't a lot of love for history out there, not a lot of love for the H component of HASS subjects. A few wry smiles, might be a couple of those boys who told me they didn't like history in the room at the moment. You know, perhaps those lads would agree with one of the characters in Jane Austen's novels who described history as being quite tiresome, filled with the quarrels of popes and kings, with wars and pestilence on every page, the men also good for nothing and hardly any women at all. Perhaps when you kind of come to Daniel chapter 11, you sort of feel somewhat similar. You know, we only just read a small section of Daniel 11 before, but the truth is it's a long chapter, and at first reading it does seem to be filled with the quarrels of long dead kings with wars on every page. But you know, this morning, whether you're someone who loves studying history or not, I want to suggest that what we discover in these chapters is that history is a great place to go when we feel discouraged. Or we're struggling to make sense of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. See, Daniel chapter 11 and 12, part of a vision, as Estelle told us before, that started back in chapter 10. A vision that Daniel received at a time when the Jews had returned to Jerusalem from their places of exile, intent on rebuilding the temple and restoring their lives in the promised land. However, in the face of great opposition, that rebuilding work had grinded to somewhat of a halt. God's people were moving into sort of survival mode. The once great optimism, when the building began, had kind of faded into a general attitude of discouragement and despair. And it's in response to these difficulties, in the face of discouragement, that we read back in chapter 9 that Daniel sets apart 3 weeks at the beginning of the year to mourn, to fast, and to pray. And this vision that we have in these last 3 chapters of Daniel, they're a direct response of God to Daniel in his prayer. A vision that speaks powerfully to Daniel in his discouragement and in his despair. And so if you're here this morning and life is just one endless victory after another, where you're constantly growing in Christ and triumphing over sin in such a linear upwards trajectory, then maybe you'll find it hard to relate to what's going on in Daniel chapters 11 and 12. However, if you're here this morning and you know what it is to struggle, to feel broken, to fail when you attempt to do what God has told you, if you've ever wondered where God is in the life circumstances that you find yourself in, how to make sense of the gap between his glorious promises and the realities of your everyday life, then Daniel 11 and 12 are for you. As we take a moment to reflect on history, observe God's works in the world, I hope you'll discover that there's no greater comfort. There's nothing more safe and secure, nothing that brings more certain hope than knowing that you're one of God's people. And so with that in mind, let's unpack these few remarkable chapters here at the end of the book of Daniel. You know, Daniel chapter 11, which we read a small section of before, it's a very unique part of the Bible because its prophecy is just so remarkably specific that leads some to believe that you can identify 13 of the 16 rulers of the northern and southern kingdoms between 322 and 163 BC. You know, a verse-by-verse study of chapter 11 showing all its historical accuracy, it would certainly be fascinating. perhaps even be helpful, but it could also mean that we're here till 7 a.m. Tomorrow morning. And so we're not going to do that. We're not going to unpack chapter 11 verse by verse, but we're going to sort of take maybe a quick bird's eye view overview of what's kind of taking place. And I'm sorry, not sorry, to the history buffs in the room. You may have to do that analysis verse by verse in your own time. But chapter 11 can kind of be sort of divided into sort of three phases of history. The first phase is kind of covered in verses 5 to 20, and it unpacks the ongoing warring of the north and southern kingdoms, perhaps between about 322 and 175 BC. And then verses 21 to 35, they kind of make up phase 2, which basically focuses in on one king, Antiochus the Fourth, who, though he wasn't in line for the throne, sort of forced his way into kingship, growing in power and making strategic alliances along the way. And then phase 3 basically takes up the rest of chapter 11, verses 36 through to 45. And it's a more difficult sort of section to pinpoint exactly in history, which perhaps indicates, like we've seen throughout the whole of the apocalyptic sections of Daniel, that this section of the vision is more of a metaphorical way of indicating history won't come to an end until the coming of another Antiochus-like king, a metaphor for the repeating nature of history that will continue to the end. All in all, though, chapter 11 is a vision of how things are going to play out with kings and kingdoms. And as you read it, it's kind of like Daniel's been given a multiple series binge session on a Netflix show. I mean, one kingdom rises up against another. It's filled with violence and rage and anger and pride and war. There's families who rise against families. Daughters are given away to make alliances. There's betrayal. There's rebellion, exploitation of people with taxes. There's deceptions and nepotism. It really is just another Netflix series, right? And it's even more TV show-like because as all these events in chapter 11 kind of play out, there's clearly a director that stands behind every scene and every line. Someone calling the shots, determining the length of time that kingdoms will rise and when it's time for characters to exit stage left. And then eventually making a call as to when the whole thing is going to come to an end. See, when you read through chapter 11, all the way through it, you're reminded again and again that God is calling the shots. Over and over again, we read statements like this, verse 12, yet he will not remain triumphant. He will plot the overthrow of fortresses, but only for a time, in verse 24. At the appointed time, he will invade, in verse 29. He'll be successful until the time of wrath is completed, for what has been determined must take place. Verse 37, at the time of the end, in verse 40. See, there's a director calling the shots here. A sovereign God who's already determined the timing of everything. He has a plan and a purpose. And all of history is the perfectly executed script of God who makes no mistakes and does not miss a beat. Amidst the drama and the chaos of the world, amidst the trial and the struggle of God's people, history is the demonstration that God is working everything according to his will and to accomplish his purposes. It's what makes history just so incredible. Because for God's people, it's not a series of random events of dead popes and kings involving good for nothing men and hardly any women. Rather, history is the account of God accomplishing all that he has planned and purposed in every moment of every era. As the students in the room, next time you open up your history books or turn on your history apps, whether you're studying ancient history or Australian history, let history remind you of the God who lies behind every moment. He's the master script writer with fingerprints on every page. And he's already determined where the script is running and where the whole thing will come to an end. And even here in Daniel chapters 11 and 12, we see glimpses of where the script is headed. Jump over now with me to chapter 12, verse 1, as Daniel gets a glimpse of how the script will end. Chapter 12, verse 1, we read this. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Could there be any more comforting words to receive amidst the chaos, amidst discouragement and despair? See, if the message of chapter 11 is it's going to get worse, Daniel, ahead of you is worse, then the message of chapter 12 is, but don't worry, Daniel, the end is spectacular. Everyone whose name is written in the book will be delivered, Daniel's told. When the script runs its course in life as we know it, when it all comes to an end, the master scriptwriter has determined that everyone whose names are written in the book will be delivered. Regardless of the trials and tribulations that they face, regardless of the circumstances that they found themselves in, regardless of how well they think they navigated those circumstances, everyone whose names are written in the book will be delivered. It'd be so easy, with all the drama going on in these final chapters, to skip that incredible verse, wouldn't it? Easy to get lost in the astonishment of all the spiritual aspects that we looked at last week in chapter 10, or all the detail that's there in chapter 11, and miss the beauty of what's written here in verse 2 of chapter 12. You know, Jesus, he knew how easy it was to lose sight of this wonderful truth. And he once told his disciples this in Luke chapter 10. He said, however, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Are you a follower of Jesus here this morning? Rejoice. Because the good news of the gospel is your name has been written in heaven. Because of what Jesus has done on the cross, when life comes to an end, the promise of God, the sovereign script writer, is that you will be delivered. You will rise to everlasting life. Like the aspiring theologian Stevie Wonder, you can confidently declare too, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. You know, the sovereign script writer has determined that when the end comes, those who belong to him will be delivered and rise to everlasting life. It's a done deal. Are you struggling this morning under the weight of life's burdens? Perhaps discouraged by the struggle with sin that so easily entangles. Sister, brother, read these words here in Daniel 12 and rejoice, because your name is written in heaven. The ending has already been determined. It's the great encouragement. It's the great hope of the gospel, and it's yours. But you know, as God's people await that triumphant moment, the question remains, how are they to navigate these turbulent times ahead? How are they to live during the waiting moment for that triumphant deliverance that is coming? Well, as I mentioned to the five sixes in the room before, I think there's some four lessons here in Daniel chapter 11 and 12, four instructions that we can take for God's people. Four hallmarks of the wise that we see. So you ready for this, grade five sixes? Believe, resist, teach, and pray. Believe, resist, teach, and pray. Firstly, we read here that God's people are told to believe. Verse 32 of chapter 11, let's jump back there. We read it just before. Verse 32, we read this. With flattery, he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant. But the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Daniel is told here that the people who know their God will be strong and take action. It's one of the great themes throughout the book of Daniel, that despite living in turbulent times, God's people are called to trust in his sovereign power. Are you searching for strength amongst trials and challenges that you face? Do you want wisdom for living in the turbulent times that you find yourself in? Then set your mind towards growing to know God, to discover more about him in the pages of the Bible. Make that your daily goal, to grow to know and to trust in the sovereign God. Do you ever find yourself reading the Bible to see what it can say to you in your very circumstances right now? And then perhaps when you can't make a connection, feel like maybe that was a waste of time, or dismiss that moment of reading. Now, if you find yourself doing that, my encouragement to you is instead read the Bible so that you might know God more. The more you discover him in the pages of the Bible, the more you'll discover there's no one like our Lord. He's strong to save. He's faithful in love. He paid the debt that you owed with his own blood so that you might find salvation in him. And the more you discover and grow to know the goodness, the more you'll be able to trust in his sovereign power, that you'll be able to believe that his promises are true for you, and you'll be able to stand amidst turbulent times. Secondly, God's people are called to resist. Resist faithfully, even if it means death. Again, let's read on from verse 32. With flattery, he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant, chapter 11. But the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. And when they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the wise will stumble, so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time. You know, in the time of Antiochus there, verse 32, we read that people will be pressured and seduced with flattery. But the people who know their God, the people who believe their God, will resist them, resist the pressures in verse 33, even if it means it'll cost them their lives. See, the truth is, for those seeking to follow God's ways, obedience will mean a lifetime of faithfulness in a hostile environment, just like Daniel experienced. For some, as many of our brothers and sisters know around the world, it'll mean literal death. Faced with opposition and pressure to give in, to reject God, to protect yourself, the pressure will come. And to the world, it will look like foolishness to resist. Being willing to be fired for acting with integrity will look like foolishness to the world. Sacrificing your sporting career to grow as a follower of Jesus will look like foolishness to the world. Laying down your life for what you believe will look like foolishness to the world. But here we see the Lord calls it wisdom. Because the hope that God's people have isn't for this life alone. If God's plans, the master script writer, was just for this life here on earth, then the death of faithful Christians would have been a complete waste of time. But as we see here in Daniel, the script doesn't end with this life. Everlasting life awaits those whose names are written in heaven. As a missionary, Jim Elliot, once said before he was martyred in South America, "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." Do you have hope like that? Hope that even the fire of trial and persecution and opposition is simply the means by which you are refined, purified, and made spotless, as we read there in verse 35. Because hope like that is worth dying for. Those who know their God will resist. Knowing what is to come is so much greater than life here on earth. And then thirdly, God's people are called to teach. Those who are wise will instruct many, we read there in verse 33. But also, again, let's jump over to chapter 12 because we see a similar thing there in verse 3 of chapter 12. We read there, verse 3 of chapter 12, those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Yeah, as we've been working our way through the book of Daniel, it's actually a remarkable hallmark of Daniel's life that despite his exile, despite his changing environment, kings coming and going, different rulers, the whole book is filled with moments where Daniel teaches the truth of who God is with incredible boldness and confidence. Like back in chapter 2, when Daniel's called upon to interpret King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he says this: no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. Or again, when Belteshazzar was king, your majesty, chapter 5, the most high God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Well, then perhaps my favorite moment of Daniel's teaching comes in chapter 6, just after he's come out of the lion's den. And it's actually King Darius who says this about God. He says, for he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. How did King Darius know these incredible truths about God? Someone had taught him. Probably Daniel. Amidst the turbulent times, the discouragement and the despair, Daniel had faithfully taught the truths about God. And now as he's given knowledge of the coming ruthlessness of kings and the oppression that's coming on God's people, Daniel is again reminded that the hallmark of God's people is that they will teach others. And as they do, they will shine like the brightness of heaven, like the stars forever and ever. You know, if you've been a Christian for a while, no doubt you'll have come across or know people in your life who love sharing Jesus, have this gracious desire to want to share Jesus with others. And as you picture them, they shine, don't they? You know, a few months back, I got to have a video call with someone like that, someone who had given up so much of their life to share Jesus with others. His name's Peter. He's a man whose age and current health is causing his physical body to waste away. And it was a special moment to be able to chat briefly with him as his life comes to a close here on earth. But despite his physical appearance, he is shining like the brightness of heaven. Smile from ear to ear as we discuss just the goodness of God at work in our lives. Maybe you know people like that. People who have poured out their lives seeking to share Jesus with others. Maybe they even led you to Christ. And when you see them, they shine. You know, students in the room, you want to shine like the brightness of heaven? Don't do it by trying to get the best grades. Do it by telling people how great Jesus is. Moms and dads in the room, you want to shine like the stars forever and ever? Then lead your kids to righteousness. Point your kids to Jesus. Retirees in the room, if you're wanting to know how to leave a legacy that lasts and matters, don't try and do it through wise investments and healthy inheritances. Do it by leaving a legacy of pointing people to Jesus. You know, there are so many here at Christ Central who shine like the brightness of heaven and like the stars. Students, workers, mothers, fathers, grandparents, sharing Jesus with others. I got to spend time with a few of them at YAC this week, giving up a whole week to lead teenagers to righteousness, to know and to love their God. I praise God for you. You know, it's so easy to get lost in a culture that's trying so hard to make a name for ourselves, to try and shine by getting that job promotion, by creating that aesthetically beautiful home, by owning that bigger and better toy. But Daniel 12 reminds us that those who truly shine, like the brightness of heaven and like the stars forever and ever, are those who preach the gospel of Jesus. How are you going at leading many to righteousness? How are you going at preaching the good news of the gospel to those around you? See, just like Daniel and the people of God in Babylon, we too are surrounded by people whose thoughts and hopes are shaped by the present realities rather than by ultimate realities. People whose lives are shaped by selfishness and whose script isn't headed towards deliverance and everlasting life, but instead, as we saw in verse 2, headed towards shame and everlasting contempt. We're surrounded by people who haven't found forgiveness for their rejection of God and his son, Jesus, and whose only hope in life and death is the good news of Jesus. How are you going at sharing that hope with your family, your classroom mates, your work colleagues, the people in your street? And then fourthly and finally, God's people are called to pray. You know what we see in these words of Daniel, just like we did last week, is that the victory of this conflict, it's not achieved by the wise among God's people, overcoming spiritual or physical evil through their own strength. No, in verse 1 that we read just before of chapter 12, we see that it's going to happen when the heavenly host, led by the archangel Michael, rises up to deliver the saints. Just like we saw last week, our role in this conflict, amidst the trials and the challenges that we face, is to pray. The very thing that Daniel was doing back in chapter 9 when this vision comes to him. Prayer is that remarkable activity that we saw last week, that weak and helpless people do our part to move heaven and earth towards God's final victory. In the midst of trial, in the midst of turbulent times, the wise will be those who are devoted to praying for that final victory to come soon. Because that victory is coming. The end has already been determined. That, you know, as this vision comes to an end, Daniel, he's left with so many questions. What does it all mean? How long is this going to take? Maybe that's how you feel about the challenges and struggles that you face in life. Looking at the script that only speaks of turbulent times ahead for those who follow Jesus on earth. Maybe your heart cry, like Daniel's, is how long is this going to take? Well, it's to that question that Daniel is given the assurance that there is an event that will take place in the future that will signal that the end is coming. And so as we finish up, have a look, chapter 12, verse 11. We read, from that time, the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up. There will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest. And then at the end of your days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. Daniel's told, you know, the end will be near, Daniel, when the temple is destroyed and the abomination that causes desolation takes place. It's the same event that was referenced back in chapter 11, verse 31. During the time of Antiochus the Fourth, almost 400 years after Daniel's vision, the temple of God was stormed by evil men. They abolished the sacrifices and defiled the temple. They burned pig's flesh on God's sacred altar and dedicated the Holy of Holies to Zeus. It was perhaps the greatest abomination up until that point in history. But later a greater abomination would take place, when evil men would lay their hands on Jesus, whose body was the dwelling place of God on earth. And those evil men would desecrate God's new temple when they crucified Jesus on the cross. It's the pinnacle moment of all history. The moment in God's script that would signal the end is coming. See, Jesus' death on the cross, it seemed like the triumph for evil, but it was actually the greatest victory of all time. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, had conquered sin and Satan forever, freeing his people from oppression and guaranteeing everlasting life. If your heart cry is, how long is this going to take? Then the message of Daniel encourages you to look back at history and know the end is near. Sisters, brothers, hang in there. Your name is written in the book. You will be delivered. You will rise to everlasting life. You shall receive your inheritance at the end of the days. Nothing is more sure. As the vision comes to a close, Daniel is given this instruction there in verse 13, one final instruction. And he's told, press on to the end. Go your way, Daniel. Continue to do the very things that you have already been doing. Trust and believe in the sovereignty of God. Resist the influence of the culture and the pressures around you. Continue to speak the truth about God and continue to pray. And when the end comes, Daniel, you will receive your reward. Likewise, brother and sister, go your way till the end. Hang in there. Because as you do, you too have a guaranteed inheritance in heaven. And so, church, as we finish up this Daniel series, my prayer for you is just like the prayer that Paul prays for the Ephesian church. I keep asking that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the glorious Father, may give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you may know him better. I pray the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his inglorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incredibly great power for us who believe.